It is 20 till 8. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. It is our Spring On Air fundraiser. If you have yet to make a contribution, you can do so right now by going to our website, supportkuaf.com. It's easy and it's fast. You get to choose the amount that you want to pay and the method that you would like to make that payment. Again, supportkuaf.com.
They say you should try to learn one new thing every day. One place you can turn to learn about things you should know or be surprised about something you didn't know is here on Ozarks at Large. Our local news team is committed to equipping our listeners with as much information as possible in an hour's time. Ozarks at Large has a balance of long-form and short-form stories in order to best serve our listeners. Whether it's a 12-minute story that gives an in-depth look at the effort to improve broadband access to public schools across the state, or a 2-minute segment with Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, giving us entertainment suggestions for the day, you are sure to discover something you didn't know, as well as information you should know. If you think it's important to continue your education every day, please support this local public radio station. You can make your financial contribution right now online at supportkuaf.com. Your pledge will help ensure KUAF can continue educating you as well as other members of your community. Again, that website, supportkuaf.com.
And you talk about learning something new. I think the staff here at KUAF and here at Ozarks at Large specifically continue to learn more and more about the area. You know, when people contact us, you know, with an idea for a story, there's often things that I didn't know about. And or if you come in with an idea that I wasn't even aware of. Earlier this year, you went to Gateway to do a story about Martin Greer Caney. And I have lived here forever and have been through that, you know, area. And see, I guess I've seen the sign and just thought it didn't exist anymore or just didn't register.
I hope so, you'll stop now.
No, absolutely. I was up that way about a month or so ago and pointed out the sign to my boyfriend. And I said, yeah, we need to stop up there. I've been to his new location in Bentonville, which I found out through your story. But I had no idea that we had this father-son tradition of handmade candies happening right there in Benton County. And like I said, I've been here most of my life, so.
It's definitely one of my favorite things about my job here on Ozarks at Large is learning something new every day. I mean, it's never ending. Every day is different, and that's one of my favorite things. And I hope that every day is different for our listeners also.
Yes.
I hope it doesn't get, you know, old. I hope that they learn something new every single day.
And I think that's what's nice about Ozarks at Large is when you tune in, you're never sure what you're going to hear. And I think that keeps it interesting. And like you said, I hope that keeps it interesting for the listener. And I feel like public radio listeners are often very curious people. And so I feel this is a great fit for our local curious community as we try to bring you stories about any topic that we can come up with.
Right. And if you enjoy learning new things on Ozarks at Large and would like to help us keep that going, please contribute now at supportkuaf.com.
And thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Nobel Peace Prize is one of the most famous honors given annually. It is also often one of the most discussed and debated awards as well. Since 1990, Gerd Lundestad has been the permanent secretary for the Nobel Peace Prize Committee. He receives the nominations from around the world, and he's privy to the discussions from the voting members of the committee as they narrow the field. Last month, he spoke about his 25 years with the Nobel Peace Prize as part of the Hartman Hotz Lectures in Law and Liberal Arts series on the University of Arkansas campus. This year, he says more than 270 nominations were sent in. Now his job is to prepare reports about the nominees. When he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio during his visit to the university, he told me the prize creates conversation in part because there is no single definition of peace.
No, Alfred Nobel gave some kind of definition in his will. He mentioned three criteria for awarding the prize. Fraternity between nations, wonderful expression, but what does it mean? Reduction of standing armies, very clear. So the disarmament part is very clear. And the third element was the holding of peace congresses, which were very popular in the 1890s when he wrote his will.
This is not, I believe, correct me if I'm mistaken, but this is not a Lifetime Achievement Award. It is based on the preceding
This is a tricky question, because in the will, Nobel actually mentioned that the prize should be awarded, all the Nobel Prizes should be awarded on achievements in the preceding year. The science prizes, they have given up on this. They just disregard it. It's impossible. We have not given up. And occasionally, we will award a prize on the basis of achievements in the preceding year. Obama. Sometimes it will be a lifetime achievement, but normally it will be something in between.
I suspect that much like the United States Supreme Court conversations over a case, the conversations that happen with the committee about the prize remain secret, sealed.
For 50 years.
For 50 years. I wonder if you can answer, do conversations become passionate, heated?
No, less than you would think. I mean, on the five committee members, I'm the permanent secretary.
Right.
So I'm not a voting member. But the five members, they are selected by the Norwegian parliament, covering pretty much left to right in American Norwegian politics. And all Norwegians assume that we have these very heated discussions. No, we don't. A normal year, the members will have different favorites, but we take time. We go over this time and again. They read all the reports. We have 5, 6, 7 meetings. So it's very civilized. But we have had 3 years when it was impossible to reach agreement among the committee members. And if you want to speak out against the majority's final choice, you have to leave the committee. And this has happened 3 times in our 113-year history. This was Ossietzky, when 2 members left the committee. This was 1973. Kissinger, Lørdag Tol, 2 members left the committee. And this was 1994, when Arafat, Peres, and Rabin got the prize because of the Oslo agreements, and 1 member left the committee. But this is not the normal situation. We have a, I think the members, they adapt to each other, and we have a good time, simply.
And a sense of responsibility.
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, interest in the prize has grown tremendously. And there are hundreds of peace prizes out there in the world. The members undoubtedly feel this is difficult. And there is a great sense of responsibility, yes.
This has to be, for someone who is a historian, a student of political science, this has to be a wonderful job. And I can imagine preparing those reports on each of the semifinalists or whatever they might be informally called, is a joy to produce.
I have, I have the best job in the world. I get to meet famous people. I get to travel as much as I want. And I still have time to do my academic writings. And then I invented the Nobel Peace Prize concert 20 years ago. So, and that, of course, gives me the opportunity to meet the Hollywood celebrities and the great musical stars of the world. So, never a boring day.
Almost every American, almost everybody, perhaps everywhere, knows of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Good.
I don't think everybody knows exactly how it's awarded, how it's bestowed. First of all, there are nominations, and
yes,
it's over 200 this year, right?
Yes, we have a new record. We have 278 candidates for the Nobel Peace Prize this year. This is the highest we've ever had. It's very easy to be nominated for the prize because there are thousands and thousands of persons who have the right to make a nomination. And there are quite a few right here on campus because professors of history, political science, philosophy, at any university, anywhere in the world, have the right to make nominations. And any member of any government and any national assembly anywhere in the world can make nominations. And this is often misunderstood. For instance, many newspapers printed articles about the Nobel Peace Prize when we released this number, the 278, for this year. And some of these are known. For instance, it's known that a member of the Russian parliament nominated Putin. And as long as a person with the right to make a nomination makes this, it's part of the list. So there's no element of approval from the committee in the nomination procedure. And of course, when I open my email the next day, hundreds of email messages, and they all start out, "You idiots, how in the world can you consider Putin?"
If I were an elected member of Congress,
yes,
I could nominate my wife.
Yes, you could.
I mean, if I wanted.
But I wonder what your reason would be, it would be a valid nomination. And we do get many, many nominations from senators and U.S. representatives. I would say after the Norwegian parliament, U.S. Congress comes in second. We get, maybe 60, 80 nominations from various members of Congress every year.
The full list is kept secret, but if I am a nominator and I wish to go public with my nomination, I can do so.
Well, we don't like it, but many do.
Yeah.
So that's why quite a few of the nominations do become known, but not the full list. So the press will have a very partial list because the names will be released by the nominators.
So you have these 270-plus nominees. Then there is the willowing process, correct?
Yes. Well, the way we do this is that the deadline for nominations is February 1st of each year. And we have the first meeting then at the end of February, early March. I go, as the secretary of the committee, I go through the entire list, 278, tell the five members something in written and in oral form about each and every one. We do take all the nominations seriously. And at the first meeting, the five committee members, will add their nomination. So they can nominate the members, committee members too, but they have to do it at the first meeting. And the other thing that we do at the first meeting is to draw up the first short list, 30, 35 names. And then I and some other university professors write reports on those on that short list, the 30, 35 names. And these reports are then presented at the second meeting in April. And we narrow the list down to fewer than 10. So we go from 278 to fewer than 10 very quickly. And then we spend the rest of the time until we make the announcement this year on October 10, studying in great detail these few remaining candidates. And then we bring in top foreign experts. I mean, I try to find out who in the world are the experts on this kind of candidate. And we may ask several, they are normally university professors, we may ask several professors to write reports. And we go over these names again and again, discuss this with them among the six around the table, and then we do not reach a conclusion until we have to. I mean, immediately before the announcement in October. And the award ceremony always takes place on December 10th. Because this is the date on which Alfred Nobel died in 1896.
In an era of instant communication now, it
yes.
seems that every announcement is greeted by somebody who doesn't like it, and there is this instant amount of criticism.
Yes, true.
I mean, you're...
This is fine. We are very comfortable with this. Many of the prizes have been controversial. And of course, in America, everybody thinks Obama was controversial. No, Obama was hugely controversial in America, but not really in Europe or Africa or many other places. We had 15,000 people in Norway out on the streets in a torchlight procession celebrating Obama. So he was controversial here, but not so much elsewhere. But we have made some hugely controversial choices. And my argument is really that some of the most controversial choices have also been our best choices. In 1936, the prize was given to Karl von Ossietzky, who was the symbol of resistance to Hitler. Hitler became absolutely furious.
He demanded that no Germans would ever accept a Nobel laureate at all, right?
Absolutely. And three German scientists were prevented from going to Stockholm to receive their science prizes. And relations between Norway and Germany were harmed. Two members left the committee. There was a huge, huge debate. But the many historians who have looked at the Nobel Peace Prize, I think they pretty much agree that this was maybe not only our most controversial decision, but also maybe the most important decision. I mean, we gave the prize to Sakharov and Lech Walesa. I mean, the old men in the Kremlin, of course, they became furious. We gave the prize to the Dalai Lama and to Liu Xiaobo, and the not quite so old men in Beijing became furious. It is not our intention to make as many old men as furious as possible, but we must never be afraid of controversy if we feel this is important for the basic principles of the prize.
I guess it's a sad fact that there will never be a lack of need for a peace prize.
No, I think you're right. In the early days, there were many years when they didn't award a prize.
But during World War I, I believe?
World War II, but also other years. Of course, when you have 278 candidates, if the chairman will step up to the microphone and say that we will not be awarding any prize for this year, I mean, there has to be, we have to be close to a world war or something. Because, I mean, what are you going to do the next year if you announce that, no, we didn't find anyone worthy of the prize? And you have 278 candidates. So I think I will spill some news to you, although we're not far along in the debate. I would be hugely surprised if we don't find a candidate for this year.
Finally, if you're on a plane and someone asks you, you know, what do you do? What do you tell them?
Well, I tell them I have a double duty. I am the director of the Norwegian Nobel Institute and the secretary of the committee, and the committee awards the prize. When I travel and when I come to America, for instance, they look at my passport, and I've been to some strange places. I mean, Eritrea, Sudan, various areas of Pakistan, and they start asking me questions because they wondered, oh, well, this could be a guy with terrorist connections. And then I tell them who I am, and they instantly change the topic, and they start asking me about the Nobel Peace Prize, and they stamp my passport, and everything is fine.
Is there a place you haven't been yet that you want to go to?
Oh, yes. I love to go to places I haven't visited. We visited Saudi Arabia not too long ago. I've never been to Arkansas, so that's why I'm here.
Well, very good. Welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Gerd Lunderstad is the Nobel Director and Secretary. He delivered a talk about his 25 years with the Nobel Peace Prize last month as part of the Hartman Hotz Lectures in Law and Liberal Arts series on the University of Arkansas campus. This is Ozarks at Large.